So a lot of people ask me all the time, how is it that you do what you do being in your 40s? Well, it's a lot of hard work, but honestly, I got a lot of help. I've been going to Triple Threat Performance for my physical therapy needs for a few years now. I keep tearing this body down and they keep putting me back together again. And just recently, I joined their strength and conditioning program. And really, honestly, I don't think the mountains stand a chance this year. I feel stronger. I feel more flexible. I feel like I could go longer than I've ever had before in the past. So if you are in the Phoenix area and this sounds like something you might need or you want to up your game, check out Triple Threat Performance. That's ttpaz.com. ttpaz.com. Hey, I also want to give props to the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot. You heard me say it a million times. They're a game changer. And I'm not just saying it's not just lip service. They really are. They do what they're intended to do. And that is make a guy, woolly mammoth like myself, sound like a cat coming through the woods. And really just they're game changers. I think everybody should own a pair. It should be in your arsenal of weapons. And there is no other comparison out there. They're easy to put on, lightweight, easy to carry around with you. Don't take up a whole lot of weight and room in your backpack. It's almost foolish not to own a pair. So go check them out, Sneak Tech Sneak Boot. With the Hunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags and the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot. Today we are going to talk a little bit about backpack hunting here, and we're going to talk a little bit about packs and, you know, fitting. You know, I see a lot of guys having trouble fitting a pack, and they start, instead of working with the pack that they already have or one that has a bunch of adjustment, they just keep going from pack to pack because it feels uncomfortable for them. One, because they don't know how to adjust it. And two, they didn't know what to look for to begin with. So I reached out to the guys at Seek Outside, and then we have Kevin with us over here, and we're going to talk about backpacks for a little bit here. How's it going, Kevin?
It is going well. How are you today?
A little disorganized, a little crazy. My wife and kids are leaving for a couple weeks to go to New York. And it's like, so I run a swimming pool company also. And this time of year is so hectic for me that, like, I'm scatterbrained. I'm like, really, I'm all over the place today. So I apologize if I'm a little off, guys.
No worries. See.
Oops, sorry.
No, you should see how hectic it is here. We're getting ready to enter our busy season.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm on my way to Alaska.
Oh, nice.
I'm actually not even doing this from my house. I stopped in to pick up my brother. So we're going up there fishing, and I'll be in and out of service for about a month.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a trip. For sure.
Yeah. Hopefully the fishing's good, and hopefully get in some good backpacking adventures or maybe a nice float trip. Got pretty well equipped for everything. So.
Oh, I bet. I'm sure you know a couple of places to get gear from.
Yeah, I do.
Well, give us a little rundown about yourself.
Okay.
And then we'll jump into some questions.
I am Kevin Tim. I am owner, founder, president of Seek Outside. My wife Angie Tim and I founded it in maybe 2009-2010. We primarily focus on making gear that is very good all season, improving the backcountry experience in all seasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
And doing that is means that the gear needs to be light, needs to be durable, and it needs to perform when the weather isn't that good. And typically we end up looking our best when the weather is at its worst. So that's just kind of our little rundown.
Nice.
We are made primarily in the US. We are mostly direct with a few select retailers. Mostly we prefer to do direct because we feel that we can provide the best advice and best support for our products to ensure a really high quality customer experience. And we focus a lot on customer service. I mean, we really kind of view our customers as part of the family, and we want them to be successful, and we try to educate and help them get as much use out of their gear as they can. And I mean, I'm tickled pink if they're like, you would call us up and are like, I finally wore my tent out. You would not believe what I've been through on this. You know, so that's how we want them to do it. We don't want it stashed in a closet. So.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, so I want to pick your brain a little bit about, well, one, let's talk about how to choose the right backpack. You know, what are some guidelines? What are some things you, a guy going to look that can go in with a list of stuff, you know, let's say a list of items maybe, or a check, you know, some type of a checklist to go in and have a good starting point to find that backpack that's right for them.
Well, so first you kind of have to put what you want to do with the backpack,
Right.
right? Since we're on a hunting podcast, I'm going to assume that it's going to be hunting,
Yes.
and usually it's going to be big game hunting, even though it might run the gamut from day to 10-day, you know, backcountry hunt, right?
Yeah, I would say most guys wish that they can have a pack that takes care of everything. And that,
Right.
you know, I
And
have
so.
several backpacks, but you know, ones that I'll use for a day pack and ones that I'll use for a couple days, or ones that I'll use for, you know, a week pack or whatever. But yeah.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with the day pack thing of it. I mean, it allows you to go with just a good day pack. A lot of times allows you to go fast and light and allows you to, if you're day hunting, if you do get something, then you can always kind of figure out what to do with it then, right? However, generally speaking, you want a pack that has a supportive enough frame that it can handle a big load. As far as the weights people carry, it's kind of all over the board. I know we've had customers carry up to 160 pounds. I really don't like to go over 100 myself. I have, but you know, 85, 90, I feel is a comfortable loadout. So I mean, it depends. I know some people probably don't go much above 60, right? But that's a different class of packs than most of what you're looking for. The rec packs that are available from the main rec brands usually just are not designed for that kind of load, right? They are not designed to be supportive, you know, much above 40 or 50 pounds. So you want something that has a stiff enough frame. For that, you want something that has a belt that stays put, because if a belt stays put, doesn't stay put, you're going to end up with, you know, all the weight on your shoulders, right? You want something that can compress and control the load very well, which means, you know, I mean, face it, if you have a couple game bags of boned out elk meat, it's just kind of a blobby ball, right? And you want to control that. You don't want it all sagging to the bottom of your pack. And you also want to make sure that it fits really well. And we have taken a much more purist standpoint in that. Some other companies take more of a purist, some other companies take more of a generalist in the way they fit it to people's backs and frame heights. We personally try to provide almost a custom fit with every pack, or the capability for a custom fit. There are a couple, you know, examples where we don't fit that well, that we're trying to address. And one is people on the very small end, say people that are less than 5'5", 5'6", and very slight build. And then people that are way on the very large end. And you know, the large end, we found that we have to design a different style belt, and it goes to kind of the fundamentals as to how that works, right? Most packs go for, well, you have a 25 or 26 inch frame, which works good for a large segment of people. There's nothing wrong with that. You just have to find the right fit, and really a belt that stays in place really well and is comfortable, and also to be able to compress and control the load really well, because those heavy loads really need that. And I've done a lot of testing, and I used our panel loader pack, and I would load it up with gear, and I would place 75 pounds in different areas of it, because the panel loader, you can just open it all up. And there's a big difference when you start throwing 75 out away from your back versus close to your back versus down in the bottom. Just sit down and get up and move side to side a little bit, and you'll start to feel that weight controlling you instead of you controlling that weight.
And before you get a little bit too further along on that path, I want to back up a little bit. You started off by saying looking for a pack with a rigid frame. What are some of the things that guys can do to gauge that, to look for what's better
Well,
or not?
there's probably, I mean, all old external style frame packs are rigid, right?
Yeah, those are a little too
Some of the
rigid.
more hunting packs are rigid. The ones that are the more high-end hunting packs are all pretty rigid. What I do is I put my weight on it. I take our frame and I turn it upside down and I put my hands on it, and I just kind of lift myself off the ground and see how much it flexes, right? It doesn't need to be necessarily that stiff, but you do want it to be relatively stiff under the loads you are going to want to work with. And you want it to be durable too, because so there is a balance. Like, you can get carbon, like arrow shafts, to be pretty stiff and pretty light, but you're not going to. In a lot of cases, you're not going to get the long-term durability to stand up to pounding, or if you happen to set down a heavy pack real hard, things like that, right? So it's a balance. A little bit of flex can be okay, but you really probably want it to support that load pretty well, because once the frame has kind of quit supporting the load, then you don't really have a stable platform to even really work from, you know?
So and you also mentioned you started talking about the belt staying put. Do you have any of your packs right there to show us?
I do not. I would have to go out to my truck and grab one.
That's okay. Don't worry. It's 'cause that's all right. I most of this, most people are just going to be listening to this anyway, but I would probably I'm probably going to release it on YouTube as well. But what try to paint me a picture, I guess, with words. What is a good belt system like?
Well,
You know, what should a guy be looking for?
that's a lot easier than it sounds, right? There is some dependency based on your body style and your weight, right? There's going to be certain belts that may work better for some body styles than others. We're generally kind of an outlier in the way most packs are designed, and that we believe in conforming, and so we need to be supple enough to conform to your body really well. And by conforming, the belt stays put really well without excess tension. And just think about this: you have your belt on your pants, you don't need to crank it tightly. No one can pull that off you if you have it just at the right tension. It conforms well, you know. So, like, the test I used to do when we were doing belt designs was to put the belt on and really take the bottom of the belt like it was loaded and try to load it with 100 pounds and jump around with it, right? Just jump up and down. I would do these like jumping squats or 180 degree switch pickups is what I think they are, but there's a lot of movement, right? It's going to mimic just as much movement as you have packing out in the mountains, if not more, right? And see if you can get that belt to move off you, you know, and if you can. Now, for what you can do in a store is generally put the belt on and cinch it to a decent thing, and then weight the pack or the frame. If you have a buddy behind you or something, have them muscle up, on the top of the frame or something to just see what that does. And that'll usually shake down pretty quickly. I mean, if the belt's going to stay put on you or not.
Okay, so stay put. When you say stay put, you're talking about the belt either sliding up or sliding down or sliding around your waist. Is that what we're talking about? We're not talking about articulation because you want the belt to be able to kind of
Yeah, you
to
want the
have
belt
some
to.
kind of a side or
Yeah, you want the belt to be.
rotational, I
Yeah, you want
guess
the
that would be.
belt to be supple enough to kind of work with your body, not be super stiff, right? But yeah, you want it to not slide down. That's the big one, right? If it stays, because with a backpack, ideally, you should have a frame that is a little bit taller than your shoulders, which gives you the ability to get shoulder lift and stuff like that. I think right around lower to mid-ear is about perfect with a really good frame or with a really good belt. Some people like it a little taller, but I think lower to mid-ear gives you good head movement, if you're going up steep stuff, but it also gives you the ability to get enough lift. Then you adjust the torso of the heart length, which seems like this magic thing, everyone worries about it, but really the torso adjustment is mostly just about when you put the pack on, making sure the belt is in the right spot where you want it. Generally, for most people, this is going to be a centered on the iliacs, is going to result in the best load carriage. Few people like it higher. Some more like it a little bit below the iliacs, but generally get it centered on your iliacs. And if it stays there, then you're fine. What you can do is all the high-end packs have load lifters, and you can pull the load lifters and it pulls the weight off your shoulders a little bit. And it allows for a lot better comfort under a heavy load. But if your belt doesn't stay there, well, you don't have anything reliable. It's almost like not having a reliable frame, right? I mean, if your belt starts to go down, then you're constantly adjusting it and moving it around, and it all just kind of falls apart.
Thank you for clarifying all that. Let's talk about fitting it, like when you actually strap it on. I mean, you started talking a little bit about it, having it on the iliac, not having it above your ears. What are some of the other adjustments maybe that your pack has or common packs have that a guy should be, or a guy girl should be looking at when cinching it to their back?
Well, our packs are a big outlier in that when talking about common packs, because we didn't set up to make the same pack. Not trying to be salesman-y, we weren't really satisfied with what was out there. And we thought that what was out there really had some fundamental issues, and they a lot of times just copied and built off of someone else's pack, built off and maybe made some incremental improvements, but they had a lot of fundamental issues in how they went about things. So I'll kind of address this in the common, just in things that you want to do with adjustment, and then I'll add in kind of what you can do differently with ours. So yeah, you want a frame height that's going to, when you have the belt where you want it, because if you know, like I like my belt low, and some people do, like some people, especially the more rec people, like it kind of low because they like to reach back and grab water bottles and stuff like that. But if you like your belt a little low, I mean, you put it there, but you really want to get to that lower ear to mid-ear area most of the time. You want it to fit your back well. There's a few different ways. There's a several very good packs that are made with an absolutely flat profile. What they do is they kind of put padding in here to conform a little bit. The problem I see with this is that the center of gravity is moved back a little bit from your spine. And it's just like if you take big weights and keep moving them back and moving them back, you're gonna get tippy real quick. Same with if you put a lot of weight up here, all of a sudden you're gonna be like, whoa, that's so the more purest way is to have one is to have a frame bent that fits your back profile. A lot of the stays you can bend to do that, but this becomes a little bit of an issue in the more rigid framed packs because you can't always bend the frame to suit, right? In the lighter packs that don't have as much significant framing, you can get that bent to fit you, right? And you can get it to tuck right in, right where you want on your back and come over your shoulders. So you have the height, the frame, or the height, the frame shape. The belt size is a big one. With heavy loads, I personally think you need an inch and a half in front of your iliacs on each side, in front of the front part of them. And the reason is that so you have like your iliac crest here, and you almost always have a buckle closure here. And this gets too close to the iliac, that weight kind of vectors this on here, and it causes soreness on the iliac. So you want to get this out in front of that a little bit. We use a dual adjustment system on our belt. Most people use just a single click. And the dual adjustment allows that to be tailored a lot more. In fact, it allows that, say, you're on the iliacs, it's a top adjustment, a bottom adjustment. Say you have a little bit of soreness on your hips and you've been doing a big pack out, you can loosen the top and tighten the bottom a little bit.
Got
Or
it.
you can do vice versa, right? And you can tailor that fit. And it was really that, just a side note, that was really difficult for us because we took a lot of flack for going to that design because a lot of people thought we had the finest belt in the industry and they loved our belt. And just like if you have a truck you love, you don't want to see an updated version of it. You want that exact truck back, you know? But the facts of it are after quite a few packs, probably 1,000 or so of them out there, or more, is that more people like the dual. They think the usability is a little harder because you have to click and click instead of one click.
Big deal.
What?
I said big deal.
Yes.
What's another buckle?
But they don't need as much tension because they can tailor it better. They can adjust it a little more. There's people that are like that did have like hip pain that were like, I just get hip pain, and you give them that dual, and that hip pain goes away. So I think that most of the hardcore customers, even though they gave us some flack, most of them have come to appreciate the dual quite a bit. Then back to the main fitting part, you want an adjustable torso harness or harness so you can set the torso right. You want load lifters so you can pull it off. Regarding the harness itself, most of the time you're going to want a harness that is long enough that it comes down into here on you.
Where's that?
Somewhere it makes this curve around and down to connect to the belt of the pack bag.
So
Some
like
people that
just
are,
at a bottom portion of your ribs, maybe?
yeah. So some people that are really, really, say they pump a lot of iron and stuff, they might have a problem because they'll get so
Their
broad
chest is
chested
so
that,
big.
yeah, the harnesses will stop in there, right? So,
Hey guys, just a real quick break. Pardon the interruption. I want to talk to you about becoming a patron of the show. It's super easy. You just go to the interviews with the Hunting Masters on my Podbean account, and at the top right-hand corner, you'll see a green button that says "Become a Patron." Or if you're using the Podbean app, it's right there. Just click on the button, "Become a Patron," from any of the episodes. I really go out of my way not to bombard you with a bunch of ads and clutter up the episodes. I really like to keep it as educational and as valuable as possible. I'd like to add to that value by adding some bonus episodes that are going to be just for the patrons only. I'm going to release a few that are strictly for those of you who have contributed to the podcast. It really goes a long way, and I want to say it again that even $1 a month, pledging $1 a month, $12 a year may not seem like a whole lot, but it means the world to me. It helps me take care of the cost of producing this show, and I really appreciate it, and I'd appreciate you guys. Thanks for listening, and let's get back to this episode.
So that's the.
I had that problem.
Me too. No, we were a skinny guy testing to the max in our thing when we were prototyping these packs. It was mostly a bunch of skinny guys that looked like we'd get blown over in the woods. Wasn't the case though, but that's what we looked like. Anyway, now how we do this different, like I said, we're a fundamentally different design. Our frame height is adjustable. So that allows anyone between about 5'6" and 6'6" to get pretty much the right frame height for them, right? There are some limits there. It has a base 24 height, and below 5'6", it starts to maybe be too big for people. We also, our belt articulates in, and it has three height settings on it, so you can adjust where the load rides. Or you can take it, and it has that dual closure, but you also can take it and capture it, so it's like a traditional lumbar pad belt, and put a lumbar pad on it as well. It seems to be the lumbar pad helps people with really deep lumbar curves really seem to need the pad. The rest of the people don't really need it. Some people like it, right? I'm on the thing of I don't need it, but I actually like it because it just kind of helps keep it centered. And I actually run at the highest setting of the belt at that point, so I keep the load real high up because I just prefer a load higher up to ride higher. That's just personal preference. I don't care about reaching back and grabbing bottles and stuff like that. The torso adjustment, there's a broad range. Our frame is stiff, but it's bent to a back profile. So if you have a sunflower style profile, it may not work super well. But if you have anything like the normal S curve of most people will fit you really well. And we're almost a, like I said, there's so many different adjustments. We're really almost a custom fit pack. So.
Nice. Let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about actually packing the bag. What, how's the most, well, let's start with packing it with your gear, and then we'll transition once you've got something down, how to properly get it, to carry the load. So how to have.
So with your gear, you're best off to put lighter and little used gear towards the bottom, which would be things like sleeping bag, sleeping pad, right? You're going to pull those out if you get to camp. And that's only if you're backpacking or planning on a potential bivvy, right? The tent could go in there or it could go out. It depends on what the tent is and how much space you have, right? I try to get most of the weight around your shoulder blades in that area. That's where you're going to get and close to you. That's going to be where you're going to get the best center of gravity and carriage. So your heavyweight items are probably going to be probably your food if you're backpacking in, right? That's going to end up, if you're rifle hunting or optics, those are going to weigh a fair amount. but chances are you're going to want those outside of your pack and accessible. Then towards the top or in some place that's pretty accessible, I'll put things like rain gear if you're expecting any weather, right? Or different layers. It's always different. You're hiking in and it's 25 or could be 60, right? It
Yeah.
could be 50, it could be 15 within a couple days. So you don't really. Tripods often go outside if you use a tripod for glassing. Kill kit. I actually take the kill kit and I put it down by the sleeping bag because it's going to be in there the whole time and it's really coming out one time, And that's really about it. Trying to think what else. I mean, tent food, it's not that complicated. It's sleep gear, tent food, what you need to harvest an animal ethically, and what maybe makes your hunt enjoyable, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Do you, so I, there's always a lot of talk, and I know we could probably sit on this and talk about this for hours, but there's always a lot of talk about guys like building their gear list and having everything like down to a science, weighed and everything else. There's always, I imagine, there's a lot of trial and error with that. I got lucky. I had a good friend of mine that, provided me with his, and he hunts a lot like I do. So, when I do go back pack hunting, I just resort to that. But if a guy's going to be building his gear list, what are some of the things to kind of shorten that curve, basically?
Well, luckily, Nathan, who works for us, wrote an excellent blog on this about 3 days ago.
Oh.
It's on our site. I forget the name of it. It's how to lighten your hunting pack weight or something like that, right? But an excellent blog. I think it's probably about the best article I've seen on that. Because it takes a very logical approach. And the approach is really that it's more important to lighten the items you're carrying all the time, right? So most often hunters will pack into somewhere and set up camp and then hunt out of that. They usually aren't going through an area, just packing up camp and hunting every day. And in that, so the things that you're wearing every day are going to be your weapon, your optics, your backpack, your daily clothing. Those are the things that are most important to trim weight on. And he has a spreadsheet in there as well that you can use. Myself, I don't really get super concerned with the spreadsheet. I do get concerned with the weight part, and sometimes I do it for no other reason but to just challenge myself and to see where I can go. The last couple years, I've been trending towards more and more comfortable backcountry camps. This year, I'm actually going the opposite, swinging the pendulum back, and I'm going to kind of take a focus on, well, look, how light can I get again, and still be functional and maintain really, really good. Going light for the sake of being light is useless if you lose the function you need to do the task at hand.
If you're
But if
trading one thing for the other, like, I don't know, you might be able to go longer or whatever, but if you're tired because you're only eating, 200 calories a day or whatever,
Right.
because you're not carrying enough food, yeah, no, I get it.
And my philosophy on that is, I have a pretty light sleep kit. I really do. But that's the one thing where I'm not going to, where I'm going to go away from it, because I believe that the most important thing when you're out in the mountains, putting out a ton of energy every day, is that rest and recovery and fuel. Now the fuel, you can train your body a little bit, like, and people have their different calorie requirements, obviously, based on metabolism and stuff, but like I did a backpacking trip in the Gila in New Mexico, a little over a month ago, And my goal was to see if I could backpack efficiently, eating almost primarily keto, because that would
Wow.
greatly reduce the weight. And I did. I was doing about 16 miles a day,
Nice.
and I felt really good. And I think I was taking in maybe about 40 carbs a day at max. But I had made my own flour tortillas that were only had like 2 grams of carbs, and I had took elk sausage and Ova-ease eggs and cheese and but I had deer tacos, that I had made.
Nice.
I was eating like a king. I wasn't eating poor at all, and my energy level was really good. I was actually pretty shot, but that also requires some training too. I mean, if I go and I just start carving out for 3 weeks, there's no way I'm going to do that and feel like I have energy. My body has to be ready to burn the fat more, and you have to adjust your intensity a little bit as well. You don't have as much on the upper end.
Okay. Oh, cool. Well, awesome. I
I
want
don't
to
know if I
thank you
went on a tangent there.
for no, I mean, no, you're good, man. That was real good. That's really it. That's all I got for you. I mean, I'm not a huge backpack guy. Everybody knows that it listens to my podcast. And you kind of touched on it a little bit. It's not that I don't go hunt in the back country or I don't get I'm not a road hunter, let's put it that way. But I'm one of those guys that I would rather trade, the time and being already in position, so to speak, or being closer to, closer to striking distance by either camping further away or tell motel. I motel it all the time. I'm like, I motel it all the time. See, and I love camping. I'm going to be taking my kids. I love camping for the sake of camping, but something about the effort that goes into camping, like, cooking and this and that and cleaning up and like, sometimes I feel like it takes away from my ability to be an effective hunter. And my biggest thing is I have a really hard time sleeping, period. Like I don't sleep very well. So I have to have like the best optimal. And basically, if I could pack a, foam mattress on my back out in the woods, I probably would do that and I'd be all right. But I'm one of those guys I would rather wake up at 4 a.m. instead of 6 a.m. or whatever. Drive into where I need to get to the trailhead and hike in a couple hours in the dark and then start hunting and just do it over and over again. It's kind of stupid because I'm expending a lot of time and energy, but for some reason that's always worked for me. Another reason why I started doing that really was because I travel to hunt so much. Like, I mean, it's okay when I'm driving, but 90% of the time I'm flying. So it's hard for me to bring camping gear with me. And I mean, you can really get creative and lighten it up and get it all, because you're going to be using a backpack, but I don't know. Like I got into the habit of doing that, and that's kind of been my thing. And I
See,
mean, I've been successful at it, so I can't say that it's hurt me one way or another, but I think part of it has to do with never really having a solid gear list and having the right stuff maybe to get that
well,
quality sleep and I don't know, maybe.
I've seen a lot of people, and so I trend way more to the backpack style hunt. Couple reasons. I like the experience of it. But I find that I have way more energy because if I've done the hike in, hike in, hike up 3,000 feet, hike up 3,000 feet. And a lot of times by like day three, I'll be with someone, they're like, "Oh yeah, I saw those elk go in that drainage, but I'm not going in there anymore. I've done enough climbing. I need a day or two
No, I
off."
get it.
So
No, it
I'll
makes
do.
sense. Like my philosophy is Definitely, I do not follow me. You know, that's why I have guys like you on, so people can educate themselves and do the right thing. You know, this is a smarter way of hunting. Just, you know, technology's out there for you to be comfortable. Use it.
Yeah, I
Me
mean,
personally, I'm a wacko. I got a really twisted view on how things are and how I do things, but it works for me, but it's definitely not the smartest thing.
well, they say experience is a great teacher, and I didn't necessarily, I've made some mistakes along the way. I've had some miserable nights freezing at timberline in November. You know, not taking enough sleeping bag or enough tent or whatever, right? So I kind of learned a lot of that the hard way, but really the technology, I mean, it's possible to go on a backpack hunt in the 3 to 5 day range or, you know, carrying 30 to 38 pounds, you know, probably about 35 to 40, and that would be including rifle and minimal optics, you know. So it's certainly doable to do it without killing yourself. It does take some discipline. I've had for buddies I've went out with that, you know, they have to take two trips in because they have so much stuff they carry. So
Yeah, that'd probably be me. I just like to hire a couple of Sherpas and
I'd like to hire llamas.
there you go.
But I
I
don't
see
want to care for them all
I
the
got a
time.
buddy, Bo Beatty, that has llamas, pack of llamas that he rents out.
Yeah.
So, but let's talk a little bit about shelters.
Okay.
So you guys have got to. I had the opportunity. I've only stayed in a teepee, a floorless teepee once, and I think that was 2013. It might have been 2014. And the real only reason why we did is we had seen some deer way up high, and I was like, "There's no way we're climbing up 2,000 feet right now, and coming back down and going back up there tomorrow." So we went up there and we spent the night and sat on them. I didn't end up getting one, of course, but yeah. So my experience with teepees are slim to none. I have just about every tent you can imagine for camp. Truck camping tents, but and I got a pretty nice bivy tent, but other than that, I don't I've never had a lot of experience with the teepee stuff, and I see you
Well,
guys have a lot of that.
our teepees do quite well. I think to call them totally floorless would be a little bit of a misnomer. We do have inserts and nests and various other ways to provide comfort or things that are needed. Like for instance, 8-man teepee has a half nest, and a lot of guys buy the 8-man as their hunting camp and they buy the half nest for taking their wife out on river trips in the summer, you know? And it works really well in both facets, right? So the teepees are light, very light. They pack up very small, they're compact. They can come with the titanium wood stoves, which is what a lot of people use them with, and be a heated shelter. And where that really makes the biggest difference, I think, is in the shoulder season when it can be 65 one day and it can be sloppy the next day and hailing the next day, right? And in that vein, they have some pretty serious advantages. A lot of people think, well, what about bugs and stuff? Floorless, really not much of an issue in the western US during hunting season, right? Or during the later hunting seasons, maybe some during early archery, but even then, there's easy ways around them. But, you know, if you've got muddy boots on, you know, crawling in and out of a small 2-man tent and sticking your boots outside and leaving your rifle outside or under a tarp, or, you know, that isn't that. that maybe looks better on paper than it really is in real life when you get to doing it. Where the teepee, you can walk in it, light a little fire, warm up, dry out your gear. As well, you can, wake up relatively refreshed. Also, the days get kind of short, and if you're not hunting by yourself, sometimes the camaraderie around the stove at night or caveman TV, as a lot of people call it, can be quite amusing, So.
Right. Yeah, no, I
And
definitely see that with having the packable stove and whatnot. I was always, I mean, you started touching on it. Like I've kind of weighed the pros and cons of having like a floorless system. I mean, to me, one of the things I like about getting in a tent is kicking off my boots and walking around in my socks and whatever. And I feel like you don't really have that. You have to like either throw on some flip-flops or whatever, And then what about like when it's snowing or I feel like it gets like a soupy mess in there, like a muddy mess.
It's really not that bad. First off, I mean, it's pretty easy to throw down a tarp or ground sheet, right?
Right.
That gives you a place to walk around. But oftentimes, it's kind of desirable to keep your boots on, especially if you're going in and out often. When it's snowing or when there's a lot of snow on the ground, you have to do things like at if it's, let's define the snow like, okay, where you can pitch it on the ground and it's snowing, or where you're pitched on snow, right?
Right.
When you're pitched on the ground and it's snowing, unless there was snow there when you started, there's really not going to be any snow in your tent, unless you pull it in, right?
Right.
It's going to stay pretty dry. The stove dries out the tent very fast. An
Okay.
hour or two of running the stove, the first if you're camped in the same location for 5 days, a lot of times the first night is the worst one, because if there is ground moisture and stuff that you're on,
Yeah.
that's gonna but the stove is going to dry it out super fast. Now, if you're pitched on snow, like if you're snow camping, that's going to be a little different, but it really isn't soupy. You put some bracing for the stove. I personally like to split logs and put a little thing for the stove legs in them and put them like that.
Okay.
And you put a little brace for the poles, and you have to stake it out well. Depends on the snow consistency, but I usually just cut like 3 foot branches if it's like 3 foot deep snow and stick them through the stakeouts. But it really stays relatively consolidated outside of the, and it just kind of gets a little bit of a hard layer, and it stays pretty solid outside of the area around the stove. And the stove with the bracing will hold up, and stuff that melts underneath it will really only melt a few inches
Okay.
underneath it. So it works pretty well. I mean, we've had people, Dave and Amy Freeman used an 8-man in the Boundary Waters for their year in the wilderness, all winter long. I think
Nice.
they started in September, and they finished in September, but I think they used the tent all the way through May or June, until major bug season. So they'll work. We had some customers that crossed Algonquin or something in eastern Canada. It's a big provincial park. I think it was like a 200K winter trip with up to negative 50 below zero.
That's comfortable.
So yeah. I don't think negative 50 is ever comfy, but the stove certainly helps. So
Oh, cool. So, I mean, other than the obvious, and you touched on a couple things already, other than the obvious, it being lighter and easier to pack, what are some of the other benefits of doing, a teepee versus a traditional tent?
They typically perform better in bad weather.
Okay.
There's a couple of the more traditional brands, Hilleberg, that perform are renowned for performing really well. But there was a post on our forum a couple of years ago. The guy took the Redcliffe to do a North Face climb on the Wetterhorn, and it was like mid-November. And he met some people from a mountaineering website. It was 14ers in Colorado.
Okay.
And they had two tents. He had the Redcliffe, and they had maybe like an MSR Four Seasons or and a North Face Four Seasons.
Okay.
And both those tents went south. It was a big windstorm came up, and both of them, one of them, the floor. The seam where the floor and the tent connected, separated.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, that's kind of a weak spot. And then another one busted the poles. So they all ended up inside his Redcliffe, which you would not think. I mean, if you took a look at those three tents pitched at Timberline in November, you'd probably point to the Redcliffe and be like, well, that's going to be the first one to fall down. But everyone ended up in that. And it's not just been one instance. Some guy posted on our Adventures Facebook page maybe a year and a half ago about being in a big windstorm on, I think, the edge of Mount Adams or Mount St. Helens, St. Helens with a Redcliffe. So they perform really well in poor weather, especially given their size. So.
Cool. Awesome. Well, where can our listeners find out more about you and take a look at the products?
Well, seekoutside.com is our website. We have a couple retailers, but they're pretty limited. Go Hunt or Golly Outdoors. There's a place in Jackson, JD High Country, a few other small spots, but mostly we do most everything through our website. Our Facebook page, our Instagram page, we're active on all that.
Nice.
You also can find us at occasional outdoor shows. We don't do a ton of them, but we typically go to the backcountry hunters and anglers rondy. We do some traditional archery shoots and stuff like that.
Nice. Well, cool. Well, I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us. It was much appreciated. Hopefully, some guys can take home some good tips there, and when you go out there to purchase your gear for this season coming up, it's coming up hot. It's
Yeah.
gonna be here before, and actually probably by the time this airs, it's gonna be really close.
Yeah, by the time I get back from Alaska, it's basically going to be like, oh boy, I got to find a nice looking deer
Yeah.
and whatever else. So, yeah. No, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
All right, thank you. You have a good
Thank
one.
you. You too.
Hey guys, want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there, a lot of posts that go hand in hand with the podcast that we do, plus gear reviews. Plus, we have the signature t-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food t-shirts, and the Tuesday Coosday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.